Hey everyone, this is Tom Salemi of Device Talks. Welcome back to the Device Talks Weekly Podcast. A very happy new year to you. Thanks for being part of the Device Talks family and, of course, this podcast. This week, we'll hear from Jennifer Freed. She's the CEO of Flow Medical. We've had Jennifer on the podcast once before when she was with Explorer Surgical. She since sold that company and took some time off, but now she was brought back into the fold as CEO of a very cool device company, once again called Flow Medical, focusing on the pulmonary embolism space. And you'll find out more in my interview with Jennifer. Before that, managing editor Kayleen Brown and I kind of unpack our plans for Device Talks in 2025. We have lots of cool things coming your way, some familiar, some not, all of which will, I think, enhance your medtech experience. So make sure you listen in to the conversation between Kayleen Brown and myself. Finally, before I begin this podcast, I want to remind you that the MedTech Innovator Program, its deadline is coming up. If you want to be part of the 2025 cohort, you need to go to medtechinnovator.org, and you can find out how to apply there. If you want more information on the program, we had Paul Grand, the CEO, on a few episodes ago. Find that and give it a listen. But make sure you're part of MedTech Innovator, and they're great partners of ours. They will be a huge part of Device Talks Boston, which is coming up on April 30th and May 1st. So without any further delay, let's get this podcast started. All right, you ready for this?
Ready.
Brown, Happy New Year.
Happy New Year, Tom.
Great to see you at this time of year. I do love the new year. I do love wishing people a Happy New Year. It's a very uncomplicated greeting and salutation. There's no question, because we're all, for the most part, celebrating the same thing at the same time. I do wonder, though, sometimes if I carry it on a little too far, like with my emails. Like, I'm like, third week in January, I'm wishing people a Happy New Year. Or maybe I'm moved into hoping the new year is going well. I don't know if I do that for too long. Where do you fall on the spectrum of New Year wishes?
Well, I firmly believe that you are safe in January, okay. But once February 1st hits, that's when I recommend we go into the strong, I hope your year is going well, or the 2025 or fill in the blank years, the best year yet. That is my February on phrase. I hope this year is the best yet.
That's what we're striving for, and that's why we're talking today. You and I are going to talk a bit about Device Talks 2025, a state of the Device Talks community, so to speak. We've got a lot of great things percolating, a lot of new things that are going to keep us busy. But we're also very excited about the opportunities they'll bring to broaden our communities. So we have a lot to talk about Device Talks 2025. We're very excited about this new year. One of the things we want to cover is our refined approach to content. We've always had our tracks. We've always tried to explain all the different parts of MedTech that we touch. But going forward in 2025, and I want to get your take on this in a moment. You and I have been kicking around how we can speak to what we do at Device Talks. And you've been pressing me quite firmly that we need to that we need a clear and concise manner of explaining it. So this is what we came up with. So we've got the invented track. So this is for innovators. This is for people who invent things, invent devices, create companies. We've got the designer track. These are for our engineers. We love our engineers. These are the people who are designing MedTech's future. We have our make it track, or our build it track, for manufacturers, people who contract manufacturers whom we love, material specialists who are coming up with cool stuff like Nitinol. Just ask Jim Hamran. So we'll talk about all that there. And then finally, the sell it track. And there we'll cover reimbursement, we'll cover FDA approval, and of course, the new technologies and companies and services that are emerging to help OEMs reach doctors who are increasingly difficult to find. So kicking around this ball for a long time now, Kayleen. What do these four tracks mean to you? Do they serve as some sort of clearer marching orders for device talks to move forward?
Yes and yes. So my brain sort of works in two different ways. One, I am hyper-organized, as you know.
Thank God.
And that's really how I digest information as well. And I know I'm not alone in that. I like to have guardrails. I like to know that I'm going to find what it is that I'm looking for. So having these four categories is a really great way for me to explore the minds of the medtech leaders that we have the privilege of having access to, and to glean the answers to the questions that I have along the way. I think this is also a really important way of us taking a step back and looking at the medical device industry in a broader, more inclusive way. Mm-hmm. There are so many stakeholders that our industry isn't really quite aware of, from ideation to commercialization. Every stakeholder has an incredibly important responsibility to bringing that device to market. And to your, you summarized so beautifully, sort of the first way of thinking about it is, what is this problem that we're trying to solve? And that's device and creating the company. Mm-hmm. And those are hugely important because there are so many people that you have to reach out to make that happen. So financing and funding, if you can't pay for it, you can't bring it all the way across the finish line. Who helps you build a company? You can have one of the best engineers, but do you know how to lead a company, and vice versa? So there are insights that we can really dig into with our access to these incredible medtech leaders that's only going to provide value for every stakeholder in the medical device industry. And that brings us through the other stages that are hugely important. So you have this problem you're trying to solve. You have an idea of how you're going to solve it. Well, what does that look like? What does that look like physically and in your head? So getting the engineers involved and the product designers involved. And then, okay, now I have this design, how do I build it? How do I put a prototype in my hand? What materials do I need? How does the supply chain impact what it is that I want to do? What kind of manufacturing partners do I need to reach out to make this happen?
Yep.
Even down to the software and cybersecurity, Tom, what are all of those nuances that go in? And then selling it. What does reimbursement look like? What does the regulatory process look like? And then the commercialization. You can have the best product, but if you can't sell it and it can't reach the clinicians and the patients, does it really have the impact? So I'm excited to organize our content in these streamlined ways so that the medical device industry can get the information they need quicker and faster, kind of like our own Device Talks Google, if
exactly.
you will.
Exactly. No, that's a great way to put it. So I think it's our clear acknowledgement that the medical device development process takes so long, and people are at different stages in their own journey. And I think the way we can build this content and not only create this content, but store this content and make it available to our public, I think it's going to help people find the content that they need at that specific stage in their journey. So one area where we're going to apply these different tracks is in our podcast, of course, not only in the recording of our podcast, but also in how they're presented to the public. Today, in fact, this episode, I did an interview with Jennifer Freed. She's the CEO of Flow Medical. And folks who listen to our podcast interviews will notice I'm trying to keep sort of the flow and the freshness of the conversations that we've had that people like. But also insert that, here we're going to talk about the product, here we're going to talk about how it was designed, here we're going to talk about how it's made. So going forward, we're definitely going to be a little more structured with our verbal journeys, recounts of people's journeys through medtech. So I am excited about that. And also, I think it's going to help us in working with our sponsors. And Kayleen, I don't think people know we have sponsors for these podcasts. Obviously, they're listening and they see the logos. I don't know if they know exactly all that goes into sponsorship, and also that sponsorship is actually a great thing that more folks should consider because it really allows them to hone their own stories as well. So talk a bit for a moment about the work that you've done with our podcasts and with our sponsors.
Oh, I'd be so happy to. Working with our sponsors, Tom, has been probably one of my favorite aspects of being managing editor for Device Talks.
I love you.
I love them. oh, I love them. They love me. I love them for loving me. They love me for loving them. Like, I mean, it's just this like love fest circle. But it really is. I have never sat down for an interview with our sponsors without walking away, slacking you or calling you, it's and true. Gushing about that sponsor. It's always fill in the blank. I love them so much. I want to keep them in my pocket forever. And I learned all about Nightingale today. I didn't understand it, but now I understand it. And can we use this conversation elsewhere? Because if I don't understand Nightingale, other people might not understand Nightingale. And if I'm getting all of that from my sit downs with these sponsors, I know our audience is getting that and so much more. But it isn't just a matter of sitting down and, you know, chewing the fat and having a directionless conversation. Each of our podcasts have a sponsor for that episode. And that's hugely important, not just to get that MedTech story out to our audience, but it's also important that our audience gets another resource. And our sponsors become those partners, potential partners, and those resources for our audience who's really ultimately trying to build better medical devices. We have pre-production calls where we really talk about what is your message? Who in the medical device industry do you work with? How can your capabilities bring and build better medical devices to market? And we have those really general conversations to hone in on that messaging. And then I pull in with the sponsor and usually the comms team or a marketing team member. You know, are there specific taglines? Are there specific internal messages that you're particularly proud of? You know, do you have an incredible engineering team? Tell us about that. Do you have any case studies of, you know, really where you helped a partner succeed in a way that neither of you expected? I mean, that's how we learn. We learn from those lessons and we learn from those experiences. And then we distill it down into about 5 minutes. It is incredibly important to our sponsors to nail that messaging. And you and I really help guide what listeners like to hear, how to get in and out quickly. And then our sponsors teach us, which is incredibly helpful. And again, expands that tool belt. So those in the device industry have more potential partners that they can reach out to. And I think talking kind of back to our content tracks that you were talking about, it's even more exciting thinking about sponsors and thinking about these tracks, because one area that we haven't really highlighted is the build it section. And our sponsors tend to be suppliers in the medical device industry, not only, but they tend to be. Mm-hmm. So they are the ones who can help actually build that medical device. They can help with the supply chain issues. They can help with the manufacturing. They can help with the materials, cybersecurity, software, AI, and how to build that medical device even better. So it's a way of telling these stories, but having them provide value to everybody in our ecosystem. And you can do that through podcasts really well. And you can do it with me. So please do it with me.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I mean, for the listeners, I mean, I imagine I see these podcasts as kind of almost an introductory phone call that they're having with someone. They get to hear the person, they get to hear their insights, get to hear their perspectives, they get to hear how they present themselves. And I hope the sponsor messaging that we have on our podcast really do create that initial bond that leads to a future relationship. On the sponsor side, I have to say, you know, being the one who puts together the podcast, I obviously listen to these messages, and we're blessed to have a few serial sponsors who have been in multiple podcasts, and you can just hear their work from you from the first time they've done it to the fifth or sixth time they've done it, just how much more comfortable they are with telling of their own stories, because it's not something that a lot of people can do. I mean, there's people who can create and engineer things that I would not be able to even understand what the first step would be, but when it comes to telling or talking about how they do it, that takes a different, a different comfort level. And it's really nice and gratifying, I think, to see you help those people get to that level where they're really comfortable talking about themselves. It's really cool.
Oh, I so appreciate you bringing that up. That is the most satisfying part of what I get the opportunity to do. It's almost like a media training, taking 20 years of being a journalist and trying to make the person on the other side of the camera so comfortable and really believe in themselves. And I know exactly the couple of stories you're referring to. Mm-hmm. It's almost like they're different people, and that's so exciting. And you know, this idea of, oh, I can't tell my story. I don't know how to be in front of the camera. I'm so nervous. Fast forward, you know, a few sponsorship episodes, so a few iterations of this, and now they're on the conference circuit and they're speaking out loud in real time. And that is so terrific and wonderful. And I love it so, so much. And one other thing about sort of this, you know, innovation and this evolution for our sponsors is the material itself or the assets that come out of it. So you have this messaging that goes out to our audience and it's very important. But we also do it as a video interview, part of the media training, but also partly so that we can take the video interview, we can split it into, you know, 1 minute, 30 second clips, pull out that tagline, pull out those capabilities, and put it on social media. And I had a statistic actually just last week, which was amazing to me. There was a 30 second clip of an interview. It was being played on LinkedIn from one of our sponsors for exactly 1 week. That 30 second clip translated to 40 hours watched within the first 7 days. This was a couple weeks back. It's now in the 200s hours watched. A 30 second clip on LinkedIn. That is the power of social media. That is the power of video media. That is the power of podcasts.
Yep. And we're very happy we can help people create that content. And I've shared that with you. Videos I put up, I'm just giving you the numbers. It's blowing my mind how many people watch these. So that's really valuable. So for folks who are interested in being part of the part of the podcast, please, you know, consider that. Or don't, it's fine, but it's really, it's a huge, I think, service that that we're happy to provide. And just more broadly, talking about the network, we expect to be back with, we don't have confirmation on all of our series, but I think we'll be back with certainly most of them. Clearly, Device Talks Weekly, we'll be resuming in this episode, and then we'll be back next week and resume our weekly episode. But we have our other sort of podcast partner series, we'll be continuing those next year. But we've also got a few custom podcasts that we're working on that we really can't talk about who for yet. But you've been having a lot of fun with those.
Oh, yes. It has been so much fun, Tom. I can't even overstate. Yeah. So building these custom podcasts has been a different way of thinking about telling med tech stories. So we're not confined any longer to this 1 hour episode. Mm-hmm. We're able to tell, you know, a six plus hour story from these huge players in the medical device industry, which the podcast will come out soon. Then you'll get those names. But until then, we'll leave you wanting more. And we're telling these stories through visuals as well. So really understanding the company and what it is that they want to be known by. What is the energy? What is the feeling? We think about the music. We think about, you know, the mm-hmm. colors and the branding and going with those brand guidelines, but also putting a really interesting spin on it. And then how do you tell a story? Who are those storytellers? The media training behind it. Moderating a conversation is not easy. Being on the other end of that moderation is not easy. So we're training the guests, we're training the hosts, we're doing all of this. And then we talk about the topics, and then we help teach them how do you guide a conversation, hit all of those topic points in a set amount of time, and do so really effectively. And then you have it, it's edited, it's beautiful, it's visually and auditorily beautiful. Now where does it go? How do you distribute it? How do you market it? How do people find it? It has been a huge undertaking, but without question, I've learned a lot, and I know that our partners we're working with have been so pleased, and they've become all my new best friends.
That's fantastic. No, we're really excited to be working with those partners, and we had a huge milestone in 2024 that we need to share with folks. We've reached our 1 million play, 1 millionth play since we started the podcast network in March 2020 with Device Talks Weekly. So thank you so much,
yes,
everybody who's been part of Device Talks. I mean, it's a great, we don't see it as a conclusion of this journey, just the very first step of a long climb that we have. And as talked about here, there's a lot more great stuff coming out in 2025. So we're hoping that we'll reach the yes. 2 million mark quite a bit sooner than 5 years, but thanks to everyone who's been part of this journey. So our success of our podcast network has sort of inspired us to take a look at our Device Talks Tuesdays franchise, which has been wildly successful. Again, thank you to everybody. If we're not sold out of all of our episodes next year, we're nearly sold out. So if you have an interest in doing a Device Talks Tuesday, which is our, as I've mentioned on every podcast, our weekly webinars, we do at 4 p.m. on Tuesdays, launched those in May 2020, and they're a strong part of Device Talks. But we've taken our podcast inspiration of wanting to tell more innovation-oriented stories, and we're using that to advance the Device Talks Tuesday model. So in addition to more of the series that you saw in 2024, where we focused on surgical robotics and connected health, we're going to do more of those series. But Kaylee and I are also going to have a little fun, really taking an hour of a virtual conversation and really drilling down on one technology and one company. So we both, I think, have our external inspirations for or what we want this to look like, but we really want to give folks more than just a 30-minute audio conversation or sometimes a video to talk about their entire career. We want them to focus an hour on a particular piece of technology, and I think equally important, we want to have our attendees be able to ask questions and be able to learn more directly. So it'll be like you're listening to a podcast interview in real time. You'll be able to sort of ask your own questions and drive that conversation. So those new programs that'll be run at the same time at 4 p.m. on Tuesdays are called our Deep Dives. And we're hoping to launch our first one in February. We're talking with the company right now. I don't feel comfortable fully explaining who it is yet. I think this is going to be, like any innovation, a walk before you run sort of situation. But Kaylee, I'm really excited to be working with you on these. I think we're going to have to figure out what's the best way for us to work together too. It could be you take an episode, I take an episode. It could be we sit on an episode together. We've never really kind of done a joint interview before, and I'm excited at that notion. But are you looking forward to the opportunity to really dig deep into some medtech innovation?
I mean, that's the dream. That's my actual dream. Telling medtech stories, how they began, where they are today, and where they can be in the future, that's why I show up every single day. So having that opportunity is so thrilling. My palms are sweating. I mean, you can't hear that my palms are sweating, but my palms are actually sweating at the idea that I get to sit in front of these innovators and really better understand not just the problem they're trying to solve or the impetus for that, but what happened? It wasn't even that, oh, here's the, you know, the heart disease is the number one killer of women. Yes. But like, what for that innovator happened to make them change their entire life and choose a very difficult path? And then who did they meet up with? Who was that first phone call? Who was that partner that they reached out to? And how did that partner introduce them to another partner? And then who was the person who started designing the device? And then who were the people who helped build that device? And then who was the really smart commercial person who said, I know how to help you sell that device? And who was the person who said, I'll help you get that device paid for and the reimbursement? There are so many questions that we don't have time to answer in these shorter episodes of all of the different types of content that we have. So being able to just drill down one specific device, ask those questions, I know that I'm going to learn a lot, but I think more importantly, those who are innovating as we speak now are going to learn how to build a better medical device on the shoulders of those who did before. Mm-hmm. Thrilled.
Absolutely. I agree 100% with everything you said. And again, it's going to afford folks the opportunity to sit in on a podcast interview and ask questions that neither you nor I are equipped to ask in terms of understanding of engineering.
Exactly.
It's I feel like we're opening the field to everybody out there. So I'm really looking forward to bringing that forward for our Device Talks community. So those will be called the Deep Dives. Folks should definitely keep an eye out for those in 2025. All right, so we've talked about podcasts, we've talked about our virtual plans. I think one of the biggest changes or biggest additions or biggest returns that we're looking forward to in 2025 is the return of Device Talks Minnesota. We'll be back in Minnesota on June 11th, and that'll be in addition to Device Talks Boston, which is happening on April 30th and May 1st at the Boston Convention Center, and Device Talks West, which is happening October 15th and 16th at the Santa Clara Convention Center. We've been doing those for the past 3 years. And for those who aren't familiar with the Device Talks history, we were doing Device Talks Minnesota prior to the pandemic. We brought back the two shows, the East Coast shows, and we've been looking for the right opportunity, the right space for Device Talks Minnesota. And it's taken longer than I wanted it to, frankly, but I'm happy we waited because I think we found the exact right time and the exact right space for Device Talks Minnesota. So focusing on that one first, even though it's our second event, Device Talks Minnesota will be sort of a boutique version of Device Talks meetings. Device Talks meetings have the large expo floor. We're partnered with our robotics conferences. They're 2 day affairs, plus 2 days plus now, where we're doing some networking the night before. Device Talks Minnesota will be a 1 day affair at the McNamara Alumni Center at the University of Minnesota. And it will definitely follow the tracks that Kayla and I have been talking about throughout this entire conversation. The invent it, design it, build it, sell it track. We'll have conversations centered on all of that. We'll be talking to folks in the Twin Cities area and beyond. We'll draw from both coasts as well. So as you can tell, I'm very excited about Device Talks Minnesota coming back. We've already had plenty to do organizing Device Talks Boston and Device Talks West. Adding this in there is more labor, but it's clearly a labor of love, because I do really love the Twin Cities and happy to be bringing Device Talks back there. Kaylin, you joined again March 2023, thank God, to help with the podcast network primarily. You're a managing editor there. You're wonderful at generating content, creating content, but also tracking our content process, our manufacturing of great content. You've also, though, been indispensable in these in-person events leading up our more important sessions and our more important networking opportunities. You've done in-person conferences before, but what do you enjoy most about the in-person conferences, and what are you looking forward to maybe specifically in 2025 at one or all of our meetings? It's a broad question, but we've got so much going on.
No, it's a great question. So I do love sitting behind my screen and organizing and building content behind a screen. I love that. But there is absolutely nothing that replaces in person. The energy might be the best way to describe it. So I always kind of think about our in-person events and in-person events in general as a way to re-inspire me to continue building content and having those conversations, because sometimes it feels like, and I think this could be true for everybody in our ecosystem, it kind of feels like we're in a vacuum. Yep. So when we are in person, it's like, wait, I'm not alone. And this person is struggling with the same thing I'm struggling, or this person succeeded in a way that thrills me. And how did they do that? And building out your Rolodex. And for those who aren't millennials or younger than millennials, you don't know what that is, but it's your contact on your phone app. So really building that out. The other part of our in-person conferences, which is so important, is I always say it's kind of like old home week, getting to see my MedTech family. You've heard me say that MedTech is familial more times than I can even count, and it truly is. So I have countless aunts and uncles and sisters and cousins who've really taught me a lot, everything that I know, and hopefully, but making these connections in person has been unequivocally the most effective way to move health forward in my 20 years. There is nothing like that connection in person, because people do business with people. They don't do business with businesses. Mm-hmm. And then on a personal level, being able to be on stage, leading these conversations, asking the questions that are burning in my own mind, that other people in the audience have the same questions, and then allowing a platform for our audience members to ask their questions directly, That is the fire in which my enthusiasm grows, if you will. I mean, that is really where it all comes down to. Like, there is just nothing like that experience. And if you haven't attended a Device Talks conference or an in-person conference recently, there is nothing better to rejuvenate you, to re-inspire you than doing that. I could not recommend it more.
No, I agree completely. Of course, it's there certainly is a calm before the storm at the start of a conference, and you have very little control over what will turn out. And then when it all turns out great, you feel fantastic at the end. And for me, to your point, I mean, I enjoy the conversations on stage and the interviews, like with Andy Pierce at Stryker at Device Talks West. He was fantastic. But the people who come up just to say hello and to say, introduce themselves and just to say they've enjoyed the conference, that really makes it, it sounds corny, but it really makes it worth it, because you don't know what these things look like. You look at a blank Google sheet at the start of it. You're like, okay, like, let's see what this becomes. And when it becomes something great and meaningful to people, it's just such a rewarding feeling. So I'm excited about 2025 for our in-person conferences. Device Talks Boston will be our biggest event ever. I'm sure of it already. Device Talks Boston this year, 2012, last year now, at this point, 2024 was our biggest ever. And we continue to grow upwards there. Looking forward to another strong showing at Device Talks West. Really, we've got a couple of things in the works, I think, that'll help build the ecosystem around the West Coast, the Santa Clara, Silicon Valley and beyond space. So excited to be working on those projects as well. But bringing back Device Talks Minnesota has been just such an important goal of ours. And we're really happy to be able to do it this year in 2025. And I think the place, the time, the date we have for it is absolutely perfect and will be definitely worth the wait. So excited for our in-person conferences in 2025, for sure. All right, so we've covered a lot on this the State of Device Talks call. We've talked about our podcast network. How are you working with sponsors? Our in-person meetings, our virtual meetings. We've got so much going on. Kaylin, is there anything we haven't talked about that people, maybe we're not prepared to talk about completely, but people should be excited about?
So the other question we had kind of going into the 2025 year, outside of, you know, how do we organize the content so it's really as effective as possible, is how do we make that content accessible to everyone? And how do we take the conversations that are really evergreen and, you know, breathe new life into them? So we are nearly completed with building a content hub for Device Talks, where you can go to devicetalks.com and you can get access to all of our podcast conversations, our Device Talks Tuesdays, the virtual 3-day series that we have, the deep dives that you were talking about, and the audio from our in-person events. And it's going to be categorized in a way that you go in and you would say you have a question about, you know, how to build a company because you have a problem that you want to solve. You get access to hundreds of medtech leaders who have insights into that topic alone. We have these conversations, and the idea of having the content siloed the way that we were having the content siloed prior wasn't really the way to educate full spectrum, full circle. So our content hub is going to be a really easy, intuitive search. Go in, learn from these medtech leaders, and hopefully get inspired for the other stages of, you know, development and ideation. And again, it brings together all of those different types of content in a really seamless way, and making these conversations have a larger life than they have currently. It's a lot of work, but I think it's going to bring huge value to the industry. We want our audience to come in, learn, and share the information that they learned in this really open source platform. Can't wait.
Absolutely. Now, excited about that. You and Amira Weininger have been working super hard on that project. We'll have more details on that when we're ready to roll it out. But you're right. I didn't count up the number of hours of podcast interviews and virtual conversations that we've had over these past 5 years, but there's a lot of important, valuable, insightful things that have been said over that time. And we'd love to do what we can to help people find it and learn from it and grow from it and to make better medical devices. That's why we're here. So, Kayleen, I'm looking forward to 2025. This conversation has just made me even more excited if that were even possible.
Hear, hear.
All right, folks, we have a lot of great things coming to you from Device Talks in 2025. Clearly, Kayleen and I are both very excited. But right now, we're going to bring you an interview that I did with Jennifer Freed. She's the CEO of Flow Medical. Well, Jennifer Freed, welcome to the podcast.
Tom, thanks for having me.
It's my pleasure to have you back. I should say welcome back to the podcast. You were on a few years ago during the dark COVID times at the early start of the podcast with Explorer Surgical.
Yes, no mask on. No mask on right now, although I'm a little hoarse from Disney World. So if I sound a little froggy, that's why.
I'm glad, though, you've got a great new story to tell. And I want to get into the story of Flow Medical in a moment. But I think it's been a long enough time, and I think we're still all kind of trying to forget what was what we heard during the 2020 to 22 period. So people might like a refresher on your background. Jennifer, what brought you into the medical device industry?
Yeah, I have spent pretty much my whole career in early stage healthcare companies. I started as an investor. I was a venture capitalist on the West Coast, focusing on early stage med tech and healthcare software companies. And I left that fund in 2016 to focus on building my first med tech company, which was Explorer Surgical. It's a surgery software platform. We exited that business in 2021. And I spent a period of time working for the acquirer and then took a little bit of time off to focus on my wonderful kids. That was relatively short-lived. And back at it now with a new med tech company, Flow Medical, where we are developing a next generation pulmonary embolism thrombolysis solution.
Great. I hope there's an abbreviation for that because I'm going to have trouble with that later on, but you can help me. PE catheter. I knew there was something that would simplify it for me. Okay, great. What was it though? I mean, you could have invested in other industries or been an investor in firms that invested in other industries that were simpler than medtech. What drew you to the medical device industry?
I've always wanted to be in healthcare, but I never had the calling to study medicine and be a clinician.
Yeah.
I think you either have the calling or you don't, and I didn't. But I always had a fascination mm-hmm. with our healthcare industry and. You know, saw the opportunity to do good and do well at the same time. And I think when you are on the industry side, you have the privilege of being able to build next generation technologies where you aren't just touching patients one at a time, but you can build technology that can touch hundreds, thousands, and eventually millions of patients. And I got the bug doing it and I didn't lose it.
That's great. And just talking briefly about Explorer Surgical, I mean, that was a medical company for sure, but it was less of a device company than it was more of a, I don't know if it was software or SaaS or some technical thing, but you initially started off, I think, if I remember correctly, you had the kind of digital playbook mm-hmm. for surgeons to help them plan their surgery. And then when COVID did hit, you pivoted and created one of those platforms for kind of distant, long distance communications or remote communications for surgeons to consult. Am I remembering correctly as to what Explorer was?
And
tell us a bit about it and talk a bit about that pivot, because it was a bit of a pivot, I think, when COVID came down.
Yeah, well, the concept started at a research lab at University of Chicago Medical Center. My co-founder, Alex Langerman, is a head and neck surgeon. And he envisioned a more digital world of intraoperative surgical management. So we were starting to see mm-hmm. a lot more digital solutions pre-op and post-op, but really nothing that was focused on cut to close and what actually happened in the OR. So we built a digital playbook where you can map out step-by-step, role-by-role, how to do certain procedures. And we initially marketed the platform to hospitals. And it took a long time, but we had some early success. But where we really saw the business develop was by partnering with medical device companies. So we had our first medical device company come to us, I think it was in 2017, and say, we want to work with you directly. We've seen your software now being used in different hospitals. but could we work together to build out a training solution for our device where we can use this to train new physicians, onboard new hospitals, but also for our own staff? So that was the first pivot that we made as a company. And we did that in 2019. We decided to stop going after new hospital customers and focus solely on the medical device market. So that was the first pivot that we made, which was successful for us. And we started to see that business grow really nicely. And then sure enough, a year later, COVID happened and we created the remote support solution out of customer feedback that we were hearing from the medical device companies that we were working with already, where they said, this is so valuable to us because we can't have our reps and clinical specialists in the room, but we can have the Explorer tool. But what we need to make it even more value is adding in a remote component alongside the digital playbook. And so we worked very quickly to add that feature. And that's when I think everything really took off. So our business in 2020 grew 6 times over what it did in 2019. It was a wild period of growth, a lot of challenges, but also a lot of fun. So I look back on that period really fondly of our team working really closely to iterate, build new features, work hand in hand with our customers, and try and drive a solution that would help surgeons and interventionalists and their teams deliver the care that they needed at that time.
That's great. And you mentioned the company was purchased by, was it GHX?
Yeah, GHX acquired the business in fall of 2021.
Okay, great. All right. Well, let's talk now about Flow Medical. And I also want to hit upon your involvement with the MedTech Innovator Program.
Sure. But,
so help me understand. We're going to explore the company. We'll look at sort of how it was invented, how the product was designed. We'll talk about manufacturing and then plans for commercialization. But before we get into those details, give us like the 90-second elevator pitch description, or elevators are a lot faster than that now, but what is the product that you're working on and what is the problem you're trying to solve?
So pulmonary embolism, blood clots in the lungs, is a very serious and deadly disease. Venous thromboembolism impacts almost 1 million people in the U.S. every single year. So this is a widespread and deadly disease. And what happens is when you get those blood clots in your lungs, which unfortunately happens frequently, it creates this sharp increase in pressure against which your heart has to pump. So people hear pulmonary embolism and they think, oh, it's a pulmonary problem, but it's actually a hemodynamic cardiology problem because if this buildup in pressure becomes severe enough, then you ultimately go into right heart failure. So there are different drugs that you can use to treat pulmonary embolism, depending on how severe it is. Fortunately, more than half of patients are low risk, so they can be treated with anticoagulation. But patients that are more sick need to use clot-busting drugs. So the most commonly used one is TPA. So this actually goes in and dissolves clots. TPA has been used for many years to dissolve blood clots throughout the entire body, not just blood clots in the lungs. But the problem is if you deliver TPA systemically, so you put it in through an IV, you have to use a pretty big dose, about 100 milligrams. And when you deliver that much TPA into your body, you have a couple percent of patients that end up developing brain bleeds. So that makes sense for really sick pulmonary embolism patients that are on the brink and you're trying to bring them back. But there's this group of patients in the middle that are more intermediate risk, where they are stable enough that you don't need to go in and give them this huge dose of drug, but they're too sick to send them home with just an anticoagulation medication. So this is where catheter-based therapy makes sense. We can go in with a catheter and deliver the same clot-busting medication locally into the pulmonary arteries where those blood clots are and use a lot less medication. So people have been doing that for the last 20 years or so. It's been a big advance, but it is still relatively underpenetrated in terms of the use. And the big question is, how much drug do you give, right? How much therapy do you give? The reality is every patient is very different. So some patients may only need a small dose of this drug and you're going to see their pressures completely normalize. Other patients may need a lot of it delivered. So my partners and co-founders are interventionalists, Dr. Jonathan Paul and Dr. Osman Ahmed, who run the pulmonary embolism program at University of Chicago. So they live and breathe this and treat these patients every day. And they mm-hmm. saw this variation in terms of the patients they were treating. So one, they wanted to come up with a next generation device that was smart. So they have a sensor that tracks pulmonary artery pressure. So it tracks this hemodynamics to each patient. So you can tailor the dose of medication. And two, they wanted to build a better device that delivered thrombolytic drugs directly into the clot. So we have this scaffold that expands. So it's a next generation product in terms of both the engineering of the device and how we deliver drug into blood clots in the lungs. But two, it is a precision medicine approach where we have this smart monitoring that allows us to tailor it to each patient.
So the TPA is the drug, right? That works on,
TPA
on contact?
TPA is the most commonly used drug, yes.
That you're delivering, that works on contact with the clot, kind of like, not to be crude about it, but like a something that clogs a drain. So to administer that closely on site, that's how the drug must interact with the clot.
So, you know, you have your blood thinning drugs or anticoagulation drugs that thin blood out, but blood clots, it's not just thick blood. There are these fibrin strands that actually hold it together. And so these clot-busting drugs actually go and find those fibrin strands and break them down, which is why you can think of it as more of an actually clot-busting or clot-dissolving drug than just a blood thinner.
Okay.
It's really amazing when you think about it.
How did they come to I can understand how they conceived of the need for a device like this. How did they come to design it? Did they do it themselves? Did they work with anybody else? Having a sensor always an important part of it, of the device? Or do you know if that developed after?
So JP and Oz came up with this concept. It's funny, we started the podcast talking about COVID. They actually came up with the design of the device while they were being monitored at the Panera Bread at University of Chicago after getting their first COVID vaccination.
Oh, really?
So, yeah. I mean, pulmonary embolism has always been a widespread and high volume disease, but we saw 2020 just saw the numbers explode, right? And I think a lot of COVID patients ended up having very different kind of complications and more PEs. And so JP and Oz were treating these patients. I mean, they treat them every day now, but I mean, it was just this insane volume of patients that were coming in. And they kept saying, we don't have the right device that we need. So then finally, they both get their COVID vaccinations at the same time. They're sitting there being monitored to make sure they didn't have any adverse reactions. And that's when they look, and it's so funny, we still have the piece of paper and they signed it and dated it, right? But they were looking at each other saying, we really need something different, and thought for a moment about, hey, you know, maybe we should go to, you know, one of the device companies and tell them. And then they said, no, let's just do this ourselves. How hard how hard can it be, right? Well, we'll build something, we'll get a 510K in 6 months. And, you know, I wish it was that easy, but it shouldn't be that easy because, you know, there should be regulation of devices. So they then started working with University of Chicago and the tech transfer team on the IP side. And then started collaborating with a local engineering firm called Oxygen MedTech that is led by Tyler Panian, who was lead engineer at Endotronics. So also a local Chicago company with a catheter-based system that goes into the pulmonary artery. So Tyler was a really integral part of, you know, working very closely with our team, having a deep knowledge of that anatomy and of building new devices. And so the team at Flow worked very closely with the team at Oxygen to go through that phase zero feasibility. Can this work? What does it look like? You know, fast prototyping.
And when was it clear to them that this was not a product, but a company? When did they know it was going to be a company? Right off the bat, or did that kind of become it?
You'd have to ask them. You know, they're not here on the podcast with me. I'd call them in, but I think they're both clinical today.
That is perfectly fine.
I just talked to JP, but no, I think, you know, it's funny because when I exited Explore at the end of 2021, Steve Gould, who was on the board of Flow and was intimately involved with it from the beginning. Steve was one of my angel investors at Explore. I've known him for 10 years. And he ran the vascular surgery department a number of years ago. So he's also trained in this particular field of medicine. And he called me shortly after I sold Explore and said, John, I have your next one for you. And I'm talking on the phone. You know, I just sold Explore. I was, you know, 39 weeks pregnant. And I just said, Steve, I can't even talk to you right now. Right? Just, I love you. You're amazing. But please just go away right now. I can't have this conversation. And then he called me back about a year and a half ago. At that point, I had been I left GHX. I was spending time with my kids, but I was thinking about what I wanted to do next. And that's when he got me roped back in. So, and that was early 2022. So I'd say it was probably around that time, maybe a year and a half in to working on this, that JP and Oz were thinking seriously about bringing in a business partner and bringing in a CEO to come in and take it from, I think, a product to a company.
So what was it about the opportunity that appealed to you?
Well, when Steve called me, you know, my dad was diagnosed with a rare form of blood cancer called polycythemia vera, and a professor saying he's doing great. He's on this amazing new biologic drug, and it actually makes me think I maybe want to do something in that space next. We'll see. But the big problem for patients with my dad's form of blood cancer is venous thromboembolism, so developing pulmonary embolism. So naturally, when Steve called me and said, do you want to meet the two docs that are running this program and they have a new product, I said, yeah, well, I kind of want to know who the experts are in this field, because selfishly, I want to have their phone number if I need something for my dad. But also, I really inherently trust Steve. So not only did he know me very closely as a friend and an investor and, you know, supporter and mentor, but this was his field of medicine. And I asked him, I know you really like the two clinical founders, you've been involved with it, but what do you think about the device? I really don't know anything about this disease state. And he looked at me and said, this is the future, right? Like, this is where this is going. And so I took a meeting with them, and they asked me to be the CEO the first day I met them. And I said, guys, it doesn't work this way, right? You don't get married on the first date. I like you too, but let me come in and spend some more time. And I spent 6 months as an advisor ripping this market apart. You know, I didn't take lightly going back into an early stage startup. I know how hard it is to go from zero to one. I told myself I wasn't going to do it again. If I joined, if I was going to be the CEO again of a company, I was going to go later stage. But I looked up after spending 6 months and trying to look for reasons to not do it. And I just looked at my husband and said, I think this is the best thing I've seen in med tech in my whole career. And I would be crazy if I didn't go in and do this.
That's great. Talk a bit about more. You gave us a little bit of a glimpse, verbal glimpse of the product before, but what is it? Talk a bit more about its design and its structure. And again, explain to me, if you don't mind, the role that the sensor plays. I get the scaffolding and how that'll deliver the drug more closely, but how does it all work together?
Yeah. So a healthy person's pulmonary artery pressure, hopefully you and I walking around today, was explained to me as a quarter over a dime. So it should be 25 systolic over 10 diastolic, roughly. When patients have these blood clots in their lungs, as I mentioned, when you start to, your lungs are taking blood throughout and going into the capillary system. And if enough of those small vessels get blocked up, it creates this increase in pressure. So you're going to see these patients that have elevated pressures, and it can be 50, 60, 70 systolic, right, over 30-something diastolic. So you have these very elevated pressures. And ultimately, if the pressure just becomes too much, your right ventricle fails, And that puts you into heart failure. And that's what causes these patients to decompensate. And this is what causes mortality in these PE patients. So when you are treating these patients, you're trying to relieve that pressure. And so by dissolving those blood clots, you then create flow again and you start to see that pressure normalize. But the challenge is every patient is different. So you could have a patient where you give them drug for 2 hours and you see their hemodynamics completely normalize. Other patients, you could treat them and you're infusing drug for 12 hours or 24 hours and it still may not fully normalize or start to level off. So right now, this is some of the work that I did when I was evaluating this. I called a couple dozen interventionalists. And interestingly, about half the time these procedures are done by interventional radiologists, the other half the time some by interventional cardiologists. That's kind of a fun nuance and just interesting being in the space because there's some different treatment approaches. But everybody had a different, you know, I'd say protocol of what they did. So some people said, hey, I give lytics for 24 hours when I bring them back in. Other people did 12 hours. Other people did 4. And the reality is every patient is totally different. And so that's where we see this really big opportunity to use data to know when to stop therapy. So you put these catheters in pretty quickly in the cath lab, but then you have to let the drug infuse and let the drug do its job while being appropriately placed and having contact with the clot, et cetera. And that's where, you know, if you just look at external vitals, you don't get the full picture of what's going on with each patient. So by having this monitor in the catheter, we are able to, you know, provide more information so that the physician can decide when to stop therapy.
Wow. Okay. Well, that sounds great. So where is the product now in development? What are you, what stage are you at?
Yeah, we are kicking off DV, so design verification, as you and I were talking about before. So we have done about 15 animal labs. The last year was really rigorous engineering work for us, so getting the device design right, trying lots of different approaches, getting our CM set up. And going through that partnership, and we're eager to now put our device through the requisite testing. And then we will ask the FDA for permission to do our first in human study.
So we talked about this too before I pushed record. So in terms of manufacturing, are you manufacturing your device now? Or are you looking for a manufacturer? What stage are you at there?
We have a contract manufacturer set up. We've been really happy with the partnership. But yes, we will be manufacturing units in the hundreds going into 2025, and we'll be using those units to go through testing, but also producing our clinical units, which we're very excited about.
That's exciting stuff. So how are you, let's talk a bit about the future. You raised a round of capital recently, correct? I'm looking for my notes here. Rather than me just giving the details of my question, why don't you tell us about the round of capital you closed on, I think just a few weeks ago, at least announced a few weeks ago.
Yeah, we closed it earlier this year, but we just announced a few weeks ago. We raised a $5 million seed round. We are really excited to have the fuel to be able to, you know, pursue the milestones that we need to as a company. And we're really proud that UCM Ventures is in this round. So this is a venture fund that was set up by University of Chicago Medicine. So all three of us are faculty at University of Chicago. My two partners, obviously clinical, and then I'm faculty of the business school. Very, very part-time. I teach one class a year, but it's the highlight of my year. I love doing it and working with business school students. So it was just a really meaningful for us to have that financial support from the hospital, in addition to obviously all of the support that they've given us along the way with this company and for me for my last company too.
The UCM is the University of Chicago Medical Center Venture Group.
Yes.
So what was the, did you market it more broadly? Do you have a sense of what the seed market, the seed financing market is or environment is now for medical device companies? Or were you pretty much locked in on this one investor and you didn't really have to get wade too deep into those waters?
Oh, no. I mean, I've been having conversations with investors about flow since before I joined. I mean, for me, understanding the fundability of this company was a key part of me joining. So I wanted to make sure that it wasn't just me that was excited about it, that physicians saw value in the solution. I called strategics to say, hey, is this something that you would think about acquiring one day down the road? Is this interesting? What are the milestones you look for? What do you like? But I also called a number of venture funds. So this round actually started as our friends and family round. So right when I joined the company, I had a lot of inbound interest from investors in my last company, which was just really humbling, and I was honored to have that support. And so we closed $2 million relatively quickly when I joined, and we announced that, and then naturally had a lot more people come in. And then we held it open because UCM wanted to participate. They were creating this new fund, and we really wanted them in. So we held it open for them. They invested actually a little while ago, but it took a while to get the press release and everything out. So we wanted to get the announcement out before the end of the year. So we're really happy to have such a great group of supporters and around the table. And, you know, we're continuing all the conversations with the, you know, VCs in the space about our Series A.
And you were part of the MedTech Innovator program this year. And I think you're returning, correct? Explorer was also part of MedTech Innovator, so you're a returning alum.
Groundhog Day for me many times over.
For sure. And you won the Value Award. Yes. So what was the process like? And we're talking about the deadline for this coming MedTech Innovator program is coming up. Any advice or encouragement for companies that may be applying or considering to apply to the MedTech Innovator program?
It's a great program. I don't know why anybody wouldn't apply to it. It is very well structured. You've got a lot of strategics that are involved, as well as a lot of service providers, too, that are part of the industry. And so for me, I loved working with our corporate mentor. We got exposure to a number of companies that are either in the venous thromboembolism space or thinking about going into that space that I wouldn't have otherwise developed such nice, friendly relationships with. And then I think, of course, having the MedTech Innovator team, I think it goes without saying, is awesome. You have this really nice cohort of other entrepreneurs that are going through the same thing. So even as an example, just last week, we were going through our critical path with engineering, and we saw a really long wait time for biocompatibility testing. And the first place I went was the Slack for MedTech Innovator. And I said, hey, who's done this lately? And have you seen vendors where you can pay an expedited fee to be able to speed up your biocompatibility testing? And, you know, within an hour, I had 6 replies and, you know, hey, we tried the smaller players and these are the ones that we really liked and let me give you an introduction. Or, hey, we worked with one of the bigger players, but here's the things that we had to do or the things that we had to ask for. And so that would have taken me so much longer to get an answer to it had I not participated in the program.
That's great. And final question about Flow Medical. What is your immediate or the next few years of your life, your future is with the FDA and the whole clinical trial process.
Yes.
But if we may just project ahead, you know, what does the market look like for a device like this? You mentioned the two specialists that are kind of focusing on the space. Do you anticipate marketing to one or the other or both? What does the market look like for this space?
Yeah, we'll market to both. So I think it's hospital to hospital. Even two hospitals across the street may have different approaches for who treats pulmonary embolism, but there are around 600,000 pulmonary embolism patients every year in the U.S. We are focusing initially on the U.S. market. Anywhere from 30% to 40% of those patients are eligible for these types of advanced therapies and endovascular intervention. So it's a big market to go after. And, you know, I think this is a really exciting time to be in the pulmonary embolism intervention space. So right now, the vast majority of patients who are eligible for these therapies are still just receiving anticoagulation. So I think the market has yet to be made, and we're going to see a lot of growth in all types of pulmonary embolism therapies over the next, you know, call it 3 to 5 years. We're entering this golden age of randomized controlled trials, and a lot is changing and evolving in the industry. So we're just really excited about it, and excited to get our product into patients. So as much fun as we're having in animal studies, you know, we're excited to see this in actual patients and start making an impact.
Fantastic. All right. Well, it's a great story. Thank you for sharing it and kicking off our podcast series for 2025, our season. So it's great to have you back in the big chair at a medtech company. So thanks, Jenna, for joining us.
Thank you, Tom.
Today.
My pleasure.
All right, well, that is a wrap. Thanks again for joining us on this episode of the Device Talks Weekly Podcast. It's great to be back. We've got lots of plans for 2025, as you heard from my conversation with our managing editor, Kayleen Brown. To make sure you don't miss any of it, you should subscribe to the Device Talks Podcast Network for sure. You should also connect with myself and Kayleen Brown and Chris Neumarker on LinkedIn. We'd love to be part of your future MedTech conversations. And of course, please give a review of the Device Talks Podcast Network on your podcast players. Give a ranking. It does help other folks find the podcast. And we're all about spreading the word about this fantastic MedTech industry. So thanks again for listening to our first episode of the Device Talks Weekly Podcast in 2025. We've got many, many more coming your way.